It's real good to be back with you. If you missed last week's episode, there was none. And that's because we just got back from Brenda's mom and dad's house in Georgia. We went down there to visit with them on their 65th wedding anniversary. And their health is failing too, so it was a good visit, and yeah, we're glad to be back. It was 60 degrees, just to make all of you a little jealous. But we're going to suffer along with you through this big snow that's supposed to be coming. So it all works out in the end, right? I want to proceed to the 10th chapter of Luke. We've gotten past the four negative examples that we've already talked about. And now we want to move on to a positive example of what it means to be a disciple. In Luke chapter 10, in the first verse, it speaks about this positive example. And this isn't the first, but it is where we are. Now, after this, the Lord appointed 70 others and sent them in pairs ahead of him to every city and place where he himself was going to come. Now, this is right after, on the heels of the negative examples. Now, after this, Jesus appointed. That word, let me just explain for a moment, is important. It's only found in two places in the New Testament. And, two times as a verb and one time as a noun. So three altogether. And yet it is a common word in the Septuagint, you know, the Hebrew, or the Old Testament was written in Hebrew, but it was translated into Greek. And so it provides a great amount of help to those who are trying to figure out words in the New Testament that aren't used very often, to see how they were translated by somebody who knows Hebrew quite well, but also knows Greek quite well. It was very, very helpful. Just the same, the best example I'm going to give to you comes from Acts 1:24, where they are replacing Judas as an apostle. And they prayed and said, "You, Lord, who know the hearts of all men, show," that's the word we're talking about, appointed, "show which one of these two you have chosen." It means to reveal, to designate, or to make plain. Jesus appoints the 70, and so he reveals, designates, makes plain, or shows his disciples by sending them and by giving them power and authority over all the demons and over all diseases. They were to proclaim the kingdom of God and to heal. They were not to take anything with them. We have a prior example of this, actually, in 9:3. Where he sends out the 12. That was a warm-up exercise, and so to speak. And both of those occasions in chapter 10 and chapter 9, where he sends out 70 or the 12, are similar. There are some differences that can be noted, and there are also similarities. But missing entirely is this part about sending them where he himself was going to be going later. That's what's said about the 70, but not about the 12, although it could be true. Lest you think that these folks were sent out as they were, even though they had the power and the authority of Jesus Christ, without any information or any inkling of how they were going to pull this off. Now, you would be wrong about that if that's what you think, because Luke chapter 8, to go back even further, contains Jesus taking authority over the sea, taking authority over the Gerizim demoniac, which was Legion, if you remember, when asked what the name was. Plus, they witnessed the healing of Jairus' daughter, as well as the healing of the woman with the issue of blood. They heard about, knew about, perhaps even witnessed the bodily resurrection from the dead of the synagogue ruler's daughter. All that's in Luke 8. Luke puts it all in this compact little package and shows that there's all kinds of information out there. If they had been there, they would have seen how Jesus handled it. They would have seen that he could handle it. They would have seen the results of him handling it. So he modeled for them and gave them examples of exactly what he has commanded them to do. And the 12 in chapter 9 were sent out with his power and authority, as well as the 70 were. And what the disciples did in chapter 9 caused no little stir. It was apparently something that people were talking about all the way up to a fellow named Herod. Herod was thinking that that John had returned from the dead to haunt him in 9:7. I can imagine him running to his bedroom and hiding under the bed and starting to bark out orders, just as I also imagine Justin Trudeau is doing right now. But Jesus, from that sending of the 12, when they returned, went to Bethsaida. And yet we can't forget that there was a lot that happened between him sending out the 12 and then sending out the 70. Luke 9 contains the famous statement, "If anyone wishes to come after me, he must deny himself and take up his cross daily and follow me." This is a great statement that lots of people will bring up, quote, hopefully even live according to. But there's another statement that follows it. In 9:23 is where that first statement comes about taking up your cross and following Jesus. In verse 24 it says, "For whoever wishes to save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake, he is the one who will save it." These are what you call paradoxical statements. Both of them are seeming apparent contradictions, verbal contradictions, not actual contradictions, but seemingly apparent verbal contradictions. And the great paradox is that in the first place, in 9:23, you're saddled with the means of death, but you're also asked to keep carrying it daily. How that can be is very difficult to understand. I mean, the cross is nothing but a means of execution, and you're to carry it daily, not just occasionally, but daily. So if you're on the way to your death, how is it that you do it that daily? Obviously, the idea behind carrying the cross is to die to one's own self, and what that means is to put one's will behind and to put forward Jesus' will, which is for you to carry your cross daily. So you die to self in that sense, and yet you are also called to live. And the way that you're to live is that you are to live as Jesus wants you to live. So how far should we take this metaphor? I mean, they hadn't seen Jesus on the way to his death on the cross yet. They will, of course, but they have seen others who have done this very thing. and they know all of the different attendant circumstance that goes along with it. How far should we take this? What does this actually mean in a person's life as a disciple today? Some have actually taken it fairly literally. Arthur Blessett, for one, took it literally as he carried an actual 12-foot wooden cross into every nation, it's reported in the world. Later on, he also said that God was telling him that he was supposed to obtain a divorce from his wife and marry a woman 30 years his junior. And I think some other questionable things, too. You have the Philippine crucifixions that take place every year like clockwork. And don't Roman Catholics carry crosses at various and sundry times and rituals? We actually paid an actor in downtown Dallas to walk down Main Street down to Irve, where the school was. The school paid for it. The student fees paid for it on Good Friday while I was there. And it was really something. Is that what Jesus means or meant? So this is not just a call to take up one's cross, which sounds like, to me, a call for disciples to die to self. It's also a call to live, although it is in a certain way different from the way that one would normally live. Daily carrying one's cross is walking not only bearing the very means of your own execution, but you're walking toward one's death. That's the only time that that took place in the history. One didn't just walk around with a cross with no destination. So how do you do this? Very few, actually, in church history, as opposed to the examples I've given above, actually took Jesus literally about carrying the cross, or literally about dying. So there's no suicidal tendencies or practices that could even come in here. And there's no mention of the attendant circumstance either of being rejected. If you're carrying your cross, you're rejected, you're belittled, you're scorned, you're mocked, which you can easily see from Jesus' experience, which was not exclusive to Jesus in that respect. But this is, paradoxically speaking, something that is very powerful. There is a great deal of power in paradox. You're not supposed to reconcile all the parts literally in a paradox. It is an apparent verbal contradiction that is not to be taken literally. If you do so, you start weakening the impact of it, and you do what's never intended by the one who spoke the paradox. Rather, we should simply drink it in and allow it to, if you will, wash all over us and have its way in our hearts, minds, and souls. This is the information, at least part of it, and there's more actually in the chapter, leading up to this 10:1 passage where they're appointed and sent out, that was given to the disciples before they were sent out. So discipleship means to remain accountable to Jesus, accountable to God, as well as understanding that there is the possibility on this earth, because of this world, that you will be rejected and that death is a possibility. Discipleship means a basic shift in orientation as we embrace God's call upon our lives, and a humble renunciation of all of our own agendas. To say the least, discipleship is a willing choice of a different path than that of the rest of the world, and a choice toward following Jesus specifically. not just the rejection, but also the choice to follow. Well, some of you might be saying I'm going backward instead of forward in the text, and you'd be right. But I think it's necessary to get the full impact of discipleship as Jesus taught it, not as we understand it. It really doesn't matter how we understand it. It matters as to how he taught it. And that will keep us from any false assumptions should we decide to follow him as he intends for us to follow him. Weight is involved in discipleship. Can't forget that either. There's a weight, a crossbeam that you're carrying. That's a weight. If you carry it daily, I guess you get stronger. You get more able to do it. But at first, it's going to bear on you. And the longer you bear it, the more it'll become weightier. Doesn't matter how much weight you're carrying, the weight that is carried for a long time can seem like something you can't bear anymore when you might have been able to earlier. But it requires strain and hard work, especially as the journey extends out. It requires learning on the way as well. That's what following Jesus means. And folks, it never takes a holiday. So, I hope you survive this snowstorm and keep warm. And most of all, I hope that the Lord will bless you and keep you, cause his face to shine upon you until we see each other again. Lord willing, that'll take place in spite of the big snowstorm, or not. Hope you survive that and keep warm.